Mr. President, around 30 years ago, you played a leading role in the, I don't know if the name is correct, Socialist Association of Workers or Workers Union, something like this. Now you are president of a country which holds the EU presidency. Are you proud or more astonished about that, what happened and how it happened?
Neither. 30 years ago, I was a young man. And I was an expert on the issues of minorities. That was my work in the Socialist Alliance of Working People at the time. I was not in the leading position. I was simply an expert.
Secretary,
exactly. Yeah, that was one of the commissions that that organization had. And obviously at that time, we felt Slovenia very much as part of Europe. We never felt as being excluded. You also have to understand that Slovenia is a country bordering on Italy, which was a European Union member at the time, and Austria, which of course was not yet a European Union member, but was very much part of the West. Mm-hmm. So Slovenia was exposed to communication with the West, very intense in the fields of trade, also communications. I mean, we were watching TV programs from this part of Europe. I remember at that time, it was still the time of Hans-Joachim Kulenkamp.
Mm-hmm. So you were looking German TV?
Oh, sure, Einer wird gewinnen.
Gewinnen, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Right. That had a lot to do with the whole European Union and the Europäische Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft was the acronym. EWG was explained by Kulenkamp as ewige Probleme. So we understood the dynamic of European integration, but also we heard a great deal about the problems of European integration. So in other words, we were not excluded and we had that communication. Mm-hmm. Now, this has become too long, but to answer your question, I would say Slovenia has had a rather dramatic development in the past 20 years or so, but it was also a very natural development. I think that that's critical to understand. It hasn't been surprising entirely. It has been a natural evolution, a natural continuation, a very dramatic one, but still natural.
Mm-hmm. And this week, as we said before, Slovenia for the first time presides the EU summit. People call it an historic act. What could you give, or your country, Slovenia, the EU, what old members wouldn't be able to?
I wouldn't want to be presumptuous, and I don't think that we have to think in terms of bringing values that nobody else can. I think Slovenia tries to be a constructive member of the EU. We are not suggesting that we are better or unique, but we certainly see ourselves as capable of presiding the European Union successfully. And that, I think, is our main objective during the period of our presidency. This we also understand as something that relies on continuity. None of the issues before the European Union is entirely new, so we have to be very well aware of the history of every issue. And we have to think about the future, what comes after our presidency. So in short, our ambitions are high in the sense that we want to be a successful president, but we do not cultivate any presumptuous idea of bringing to the European Union something nobody else can.
But isn't it something special because you're the first country of the new member countries of the European Union that presides?
It is special, but I think European Union needs to demonstrate that the integration is taken seriously and that both old and new countries are treated on the basis of equality. So it's natural that a new country presides sometime early after the admission. Mm-hmm. And Slovenia has certain advantages in that regard, has been a very serious student of European Union, if I may put it this way, and has, through its entire governmental structure, done a lot of homework. So I think it's well prepared for the job.
Let's take it from the other side, same point. Most of the 500 million Europeans don't know exactly where your country is located. Even high-ranking politicians, I read, like George W. Bush and Silvio Berlusconi, mixed up Slovenia and Slovakia. So are you taken serious as the voice of the EU in such a small country where only a few of the Europeans know where it is?
Well, I think that Europeans have to study geography better and more. That's probably the answer to the first part of your question. Secondly...
Even Bush and Berlusconi.
Well, I think that everybody who has problems with European geography should study more of European geography.
You're right.
That's a kind of a principle, I would suggest. Secondly, as far as the size of the country and the role of the president is concerned, I think the precedents in the European Union speak in favor of smaller countries, including a country like Luxembourg, which is known to be a successful president. I worked as Slovenian diplomat in New York in early 90s, and I know that Luxembourg was appreciated as a successful president of the European Community in a very difficult time of the First Gulf War. And that was seen as something that a smaller country can more easily do because it's more open to the views of everybody and can be quite effective in bringing everybody together. So I think the European precedents speak in favor of small countries, and Slovenia, I think, can benefit from that. As far as knowledge of geography is concerned, you see, there is no other remedy. People who have difficulties have to study more.
And who has written, perhaps you know it, the agenda for the summit? Slovenia itself or the big friends like Great Britain, France, Germany?
Well, Slovenia was involved in a so-called Troika system. We worked very closely with Germany and Portugal, who were the preceding two presidents. And I think in the context of that cooperation of three countries, we articulated the program of our presidency for the semester in which we are presiding. But that work has started in the beginning of last year, at the time of the German presidency, and it continued very intensely through the second half of the year when Portugal was presiding. In other words, that was an important, I would say, critically important period of preparation for our presidency.
Let's look back for a second. We're now discussing Slovenia as presidency, but not long ago there was a discussion about EU enlargement in a broad range all in Europe, where not only Slovenia but nine other countries were acting. And there were a lot of fears about cheap labor forces and so on flooding the EU. What is now? Is everybody happy that you and Hungary and Poland are part of the EU after your impression?
Well, in Slovenia, certainly there is a very high degree of support for our membership in the EU. We are very enthusiastic in that regard. We have our opinion polls show the support, which is normally higher than 70%.
No, I mean the other side.
No, I understand, but that's the beginning of the answer.
Okay, sorry.
So I think in a country like Slovenia, this pro-European sentiment is very strong. I think the misgivings that existed initially in some of the old countries of the European Union are dissipating. I don't think that any of them has suffered any serious problem. And I have seen a recent article in Financial Times about a study that was produced for the President of the European Commission, which says that globalization in Europe was done to a large extent through expansion, and that European Union as a whole has gained from that and has done pretty well by comparison with other regions of the world. So even in global comparisons, the expansion of the European Union was a profitable project.
For everyone.
For everyone, yes. That's what the study says, and I think that politically we see less of that culture of misgivings that existed initially, immediately after the expansion. This is no longer of any relevance, I think. And countries of the European Union have discovered that on the whole, the expansion meant a benefit for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So don't you feel any resentment at all?
Coming from within, where?
Yeah, within the European Union.
I don't think that there is any resentment now. I think the initial misgivings were there. I mean, if we open the labor market too much and so forth, there were some nervous discussions at the beginning. But as far as I can see, those discussions are dying out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no more of that of that sentiment.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned the well done economic development in your country. There are, on the other side, a lot of complaints about the, let's say, democratic side of your country. Is there a misleading development? Are you rather quick on that side, a little bit, let's say, in school age on the other, on the democratic side?
I don't think so. I believe that we have a solid democracy. We have difference of opinion. We have vigorous debates on some issues, strong disagreements on other issues, and I think that all this constitutes democracy.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that any journalists.
Come to that. I don't think that any of the debates that we have demonstrates a democratic deficit. You had a specific issue in mind.
Yeah, for there are a lot of or some.
We have some of them.
for example,
these erased people, 18,000 former inhabitants from former Yugoslavia were eliminated from the public register. That was a measure that was harshly criticized as well by Amnesty International. That is one example.
And the 500 journalists who were complaining about media control. And
well, let me go one by one. I am also one of the critics of the policy of erasure. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that. We mm-hmm. have many people who are very critical, and I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. I think that measure was unjust, mm-hmm. but it has to be understood in the context. Mm-hmm. That was the time when Slovenia offered the possibility of everybody living in Slovenia to obtain Slovenian citizenship, and around 160,000 people did so. Around 18,000 people at that time did not do so for various reasons, mm-hmm. and they were erroneously, I would say wrongfully, erased from the register of the permanent residents of Slovenia. Mm-hmm. Now, many of these cases were subsequently resolved on a case-by-case basis individually, but still this is not satisfactory, and our constitutional court has ruled that this has to be remedied. Mm-hmm. Now, the fact that this hasn't been remedied so far is a problem, and I'm not hiding it. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those who are urging the government and the parliament mm-hmm. to go quickly on this mm-hmm. subject. Mm-hmm. I mean, previous governments and previous parliaments did mm-hmm. not do enough, did not solve the problem.
You said it's unjust, so you're saying that it's a violation of human rights.
Well, it certainly is a case where one could claim an element of discrimination, certainly. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. whether this is a violation of human mm-hmm. rights or not remains mm-hmm. to be seen. As you know, mm-hmm. there is a case pending mm-hmm. in the Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, mm-hmm. and that court will have to determine mm-hmm. whether the element of discrimination is strong enough to be then defined as mm-hmm. a violation mm-hmm. of that principle. Mm-hmm. That would have to wait for the court to say. Mm-hmm. Now, on the petition of the journalists, you see, you have to understand that in Slovenia, we did not yet have a full discussion on the issues of the press and the media in a modern pluralistic society. The media are always exposed to pressures of public authorities, and very importantly, pressures of owners of the media. Mm-hmm. These issues are relatively new for us. I mean, they have been discussed in West Europe for decades, and obviously as a result of that discussion, certain standards have been developed. In our country, we haven't come that far as yet, and that creates a situation in which a large number of journalists feel that they are exposed to pressures that amount to censorship. Now, this may or may not be the case, but there is a problem if a large number of journalists are saying that. So I think that it is legitimate for them to say so, And it is necessary to have a proper, wide-ranging and civil society-based discussion on that. I know that the government has a different view. I, as president, I am favoring a full civil society-based discussion which would, at the end, articulate standards of behavior for public authorities vis-à-vis the media and standards of treatment by owners of the media, of various types of media, TV, newspapers, and so forth. This is something that our democracy needs. We are not yet fully developed democracy, and therefore this kind of standards are not yet clearly articulated. And we also know that in Europe situations are different from one country to another, and that nobody can be described as 100% satisfied. I mean, there are critical views on various problems practically everywhere. But we are I recognize that we are at the beginning. We have to do much more, and we have to have this full discussion. I think it has started. We had some useful exchanges of opinions, and I'm sure that with time we shall be successful.
Coming to the, let's say, the work that you have to done within this 6 months presidency, the first and most important thing, I think, is Kosovo. How can, after your opinion, the Kosovo problem can be solved? What has to be done?
Well, you have to understand that Kosovo problem will continue to require a lot of international attention. A single solution will not do. There is no individual single solution. The independence with international supervision or controlled independence, which is now in the picture, is a step forward. But it is not a definitive solution. The problem existed before and will exist in the future. And it will require attention in the sense of international security presence, which will have to remain, and in the sense of strengthening of institutions and building a Rechtsstaat in Kosovo, which currently does not exist. The experience of the United Nations has shown that this is a difficult project, that in the 9 years of international presence in Kosovo, this hasn't come very far. So now is the time to make further steps, and it will take time. In parallel with that, we would need investment and development of Kosovo economy, which will be a task of certain magnitude, because there is a large grey economy and a lot of communication, connection with Europe through workers, remittances, pensions of people from Kosovo who have worked and retired in the West and so forth. So we have a kind of an economy which is difficult to develop or put in a framework of a normal national economy. That's a job of a magnitude which would require full engagement of the European Union.
Job of decades, huh? A job that will need decades of work.
Very probably, yes.
Because if you say we need a Rechtsstaat, you see right now, there's a huge part of the state is controlled by mafia. The economy, there is either nothing or mafia economy or shadow economy. Where to start from?
Well, I agree with you that this is a job for the decades, but you have to understand that Kosovo has been a problem of a century. It has never been really resolved in the past. It has gone through various stages, but it has always been a problem. Even at the time when it was a part of Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia and has received a lot of money from the Federal Development Fund of former Yugoslavia, even that was not a solution. That was management of a problem. And that problem will have to be managed in the future, and solutions will emerge as a matter of decades. I don't expect them to emerge very quickly. One has to be realistic about these things. You're asking where to begin. I think ULEX is one way to begin. Yes, one has to strengthen the state institutions and build the, you know, put in place what I would call building blocks of a Rechtsstaat. That hasn't been done sufficiently yet, and that's a priority.
One of the next steps would be the recognition of the independence of Kosovo, but concerning that there is no unity at all within the European Union. Do you see any chance to forge the country, the member countries, in that sense?
What do you mean forge?
To push them.
To bring them together, to one unity.
I think that the General Affairs Council has demonstrated that a large majority of European Union countries are in favor of independence. There is a small number of countries with specific reasons which are understandable, which oppose. And I think that majority will grow. One has to be patient with the European Union also.
So, but what does that mean? Is it a time from 1 year or 2 years, or how long could that?
I hope that this is a matter of months.
Okay.
Of several months. Mm-hmm.
And after that, everybody's talking about European future for the Balkan region.
Yes.
And even especially for the Kosovo, the solution should be part of this European solution.
Mm-hmm.
How can I understand this as a? Will that mean that within some years all the Balkan, Kosovo included, as part of EU, are these steps, one country after another, and the last one in 10 years, 20 years, or is it one big step? What is the that kind of future that you could explain me?
Well, I think that one has to go step by step, and that each of the country has to be treated individually. Each of them has to fulfill the criteria for membership in the European Union. And in the process, it will be possible to design specific programs for each. So I think that that's the way to go. Now, as far as the timelines are concerned, it is more difficult to say. Some countries are closer, others are less.
Let's say Croatia will be within the next 2 years.
Well, that depends again on the negotiations, which are on track. So within the framework which already exists, Croatia is very much on the right track.
Mm.
For others, it is more difficult. Now, Macedonia, I hope, will get the date of beginning of negotiations for the full membership later this year. We hope that date will be agreed to sometime before the end of this year. Of course, it would be nice if this could happen under Slovenian presidency, but we have to accept that this may come later.
Mm.
And others will have to come closer to the European Union in accordance with their level of development, in accordance with the effectiveness with which different issues will be solved. For example, the constitutional issues of Bosnia and Herzegovina will have to be part of the process. For Serbia, it is a matter also of the articulation of political will in Serbia itself, which is not yet fully articulated, and where probably some further debate will be needed. For Montenegro, the problem is different. I mean, there the will is strong, but the conditions are not fulfilled to the extent which would allow an immediate beginning of the negotiations. So in short, I would say each of the countries will require a separate approach, but of course the common denominator is that all will have to fulfill the criteria for membership.
But can you... this was in Brussels, it was just like a law, each country after the next. In recent times, experts say maybe this will not be possible, because imagine the Balkan region with 1, 2, 3, 4 spots being part of the EU, and all the neighbors and some neighbors for the next decade not being in the EU, this would create problems, not solve problems, mm-hmm. maybe. So there's another discussion to say we need to have at least blocks of countries mm-hmm. being at the same time in the, let's say, 1 year after the next, but not for a decade separated to be in the EU, because the rest will... Let's take it. Serbia is not in the EU, Kosovo is not in the EU, Bosnia-Herzegovina is not in the EU, and all the rest around it is in the EU. Will this be a solution, or will this be the beginning of a new problem situation?
I think it would be an improvement if some joined
really?
The European
yeah.
Union. I don't think that one has to think about the entire area as a package which has to be taken together. I don't see how that will be possible. I think, of course, if you make a separate status for them, not one of membership in the European Union, then one can perhaps visualize such a package approach, but I'm not sure whether that is a solution either. I think these countries have to be told, have to see that they can for real become members of the European Union. And there is no way of avoiding the fulfillment of the criteria for that. So my opinion is that step by step, one by one approach is still better, because I don't see how the alternatives would produce a better result. I don't see that. There is a debate, as you said, correct, but I don't believe that the arguments put in favor of a package approach are particularly strong.
When will they all be in the EU? In 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
It's hard to say, but certainly not in the immediate future.
But just to have a ceiling, do you think less than 10 years will be possible?
Look, you should not forget that the current EU members, those that have joined in 2004, were told about different dates in the preceding decade.
And
you remember that period and the frustrations which went with that. But I think now, after more than 10 years of experience, I think everybody appreciates the approach taken in the past. I think it was a realistic approach. We should not complain about it, although we were not very happy at times when the delays accumulated. So I think that the past experience with enlargement shows that patience is required and that fulfillment of criteria is critical. Everything else are shortcuts which do not produce a real solution.
But isn't the atmosphere within the European Union a different one? There is a large, you know, aversion against any further enlargement right now within the European Union. Well, a lot of people are saying that's enough, because we have, you know, Romania, it's not yet solved, the economy, the justice system is not as it should be, Romania is the same. So doesn't that collide, this what you said before about the enlargement, collide with the real situation within the European Union right now?
Well, obviously we have a debate, and obviously there are different opinions. I'm just telling you what my opinion is, and I hope that this opinion will prevail, not because it is mine, but because I think many people share it.
So, but you say, as you said before, it's a matter of decades, perhaps.
Perhaps, yes. Yeah. And again, let us not forget, for the current new members, it was also a matter of a decade or so, perhaps even more, before membership was became a reality. So let's not forget, let us appreciate the learning experience of the period of preparation for membership. I think that's very important, the whole transformation of countries that happens in the period of preparation. That in itself is helpful, and I think that in the Balkans that is particularly valuable.
So coming back to the next future, and during the next month you should, or you're trying to solve the Kosovo problem.
I'm not trying to solve anything. I'm just telling you that this is a problem which needs to be managed further, that the recognition is part of that management, and that further steps will be needed to manage the problem towards a solution which will take a long time. I'm not suggesting that we're going to solve the problem.
Okay, Mr. Rubel said it a little bit differently.
What was the quote?
No, he said, you know, that would be the most urgent task to solve within the Slovenian presidency.
Well, he was probably referring to the question of recognition and the most immediate task.
Yeah, that, perhaps,
so that's okay. Probably a different matter to which he referred. But we have talked about a much more ambitious question, and that is how to help Kosovo develop into a place which will be capable of becoming a member of the European Union. That is what we are talking about. Mm. That, of course, is something that has to take time.
Speaking about this recognition, you're an expert for international law. You worked many years for UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. What are you answering those colleagues who criticize that the unilateral declaration of independence of Kosovo is a violation of international law?
Well, two things. First, every declaration of independence is unilateral. There's simply no other way. When new states declares independence, that's done unilaterally. Secondly, if they say that there is a violation, they have to explain what exactly the violation is. And we haven't heard any explanation on that issue.
Hey, but that would mean you open the how do you call that, box of Pandora, because we have around 30 similar situations all around Europe, the Basques and here in the eastern part. A lot of people say we would declare ourselves independent. If this would be as easy, why have we those problems with all of them, even, let's say, law problems and on the international law?
Well, nothing was easy with regard to Kosovo.
On the law side, you said no sign of breaking any international law. So
yes, what I'm saying is Kosovo has declared independence unilaterally, as this thing is normally done.
Mm.
And of course, that has happened in particular circumstances, which include the fact that Kosovo was defined as a threat to international peace and security, which is not the case with any of the issues that you mentioned, so there is no comparison. Identification of Kosovo as a threat to international peace and security was done by the Security Council 10 years ago. After that, Kosovo Albanians were exposed to massive violence, and more than 500,000 refugees happened as a result, which necessitated an international administration of Kosovo. These are clearly unique features, something that defines the people of Kosovo as a legitimate claimant of statehood, and that has happened. So in that sense, this is a unique case which cannot simply be compared with any of the situations that you mentioned. We're not talking about difference of political opinion. We're talking about an existential threat to an entire population.
I said I don't want to be cynic, but this might be a lesson for some other groups looking for independency to become first a threat for the international family, and then get the allowance to declare themselves independent.
Well,
so as threatful I am, the more I come to my aim would
well,
be the
if they are, if they were exposed to a genocidal violence, then obviously there would be a threat, but I don't think that that's the case anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let us not forget, there was ethnic cleansing of Albanians in huge numbers, and more than 500,000 people left. I mean, that's how a threat became. That's how the situation became a threat.
Mm.
And I don't think that anybody would believe that comparisons exist.
But do you think that, for example, the Serbs in the northern part of Kosovo or in Bosnia-Herzegovina understand these, very distinctions, very fine distinctions?
I hope they do.
I'm not sure. They don't, because right now the development in the northern part of Kosovo is leading to a partition of the Kosovo.
Then they would have to be explained. And you see, there was a genocide against Bosnian Muslims in Srebrenica. Mm-hmm. There was something not of the same magnitude, but of similar character against the Albanians mm-hmm. in Kosovo. And that's very serious.
But do you think that a partition could be of Kosovo in that case could be avoided from the international community?
Yes.
It should be avoided.
It could and should be avoided.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Maybe this will need some force, some power to react.
Well, I think that first of all it would need careful negotiation and imaginative solutions.
Mm-hmm. And then?
And of course, the international security presence is there already.
But what, for example, could the OILEX do against, for example, these parallel structures in the northern part of Kosovo, the European Union? What could they really do to eliminate these structures, which are deepened in this moment in northern part of Kosovo?
Well, there has to be a negotiation on the arrangements with regard to that part of Kosovo. Of course, there will be an internal decentralization, there will be status issues that have to be addressed, and I guess that that's what the European Union is going to be engaged in.
Do you think it will be easier to find a Kosovo solution with a new Russian president?
I hope that there will be good partnership between Russia and the European Union, and that will include also a discussion on Kosovo.
So do you expect a change? Or?
Well, I'm not suggesting anything specific. It's far too early for that. This issue is on the European agenda for a very long time. I'm sure that the new president is aware of it, and that there will be a discussion, and that there will be an agreement.
As we have the indication that we just have one question, I make a spot from one big brother to the other big brother. We haven't talked about the United States up to now. The new EU countries seem sometimes to have more interest, to have very deep relations to the United States, more important for some of them or for all of them than good relations to Brussels and to the EU, much more important NATO than the EU. Is this impression correct, or is it part of history?
Well, I don't know exactly what you are referring to, but I mean the fact remains that many countries in Europe see NATO as a critically important guarantee of their security. And that, I think, has an impact. If NATO is perceived as the guarantor of their security, and European Union is seen as a guarantor of their economic and social development. As you know, security is a very fundamental value for every society, and one should not be surprised that attachment to NATO is strong in some parts of what one would call new members of the European Union.
Mm-hmm. So even coming from the historic situation, the sentiments to the United States in the new EU countries are quite deeper than, for instance, in France or in Germany or in Italy, let's say that like this.
Well, I cannot really compare. I think that the sentiments towards, positive sentiments towards the United States in France have been strengthened with the new government, haven't they?
Let's say in the Élysée, I don't know whether in the streets or in the
cities. I haven't done any opinion poll myself, but I think that in Europe there is quite a lot of positive sentiment towards the United States. Of course, that doesn't mean that Europeans always agree with every policy that the United
You don't
States
see a special States. Relationship in the Eastern, let's say the visa treaty of the Czechs, which is treated like this in these weeks and which produced complaints in Brussels, the missile defense stations in Poland. So there is a special kind of relationship seen in the other parts
even
of Europe.
Even your government, because there were recently these telephone calls made public, even your government was, you know, in a deep conversation between U.S. diplomats and...
What's wrong with deep conversations?
No, yeah, but it was just, you know... there were some journalists. They wrote as a scandal about it because you know that creates the impression that you're getting orders from the United States concerning your position in the Kosovo issue.
Well, if those impressions were created, they were simply wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The impressions may be wrong, as you know, and those impressions were wrong. But I mean, you ask a number of very different questions.
So just to ask, is there a special relationship? Another relationship than in the rest of Europe. This is the sense of the direction of my...
First of all, suggest you not to take new members of the European Union as a bloc.
Mm.
They are not a bloc.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
In most of the cases, they are not a bloc. They shouldn't be treated as one single system.
But you created the Vilnius Group that is kind of a bloc.
Vilnius Group was a kind of a bloc, and it was an unfortunate event, in my opinion.
Was not a brilliant idea, no?
It was not a brilliant idea and didn't prove to be of any particular value in the subsequent years since it was put together. I mean, you're talking about Iraq, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, but of course, to make too much on the basis of that initiative, I think, is inaccurate, and I would advise against that. I think it is much wiser to look at the situation of each of the countries individually.
So, I hear the sound of the president of Slovenia to say, we don't want to be part of any bloc, nor an Eastern bloc, nor other. We want to be part of the EU,
exactly.
Looking for special conclusions and solutions after the special issues. This is not exactly the position in Poland, for instance. They try to create a counterpower to the German-French leading role, to other groups of the old heart. And the Baltics, for instance, they're always looking for fighters with them against, let's say, the Germans or the French, or who the hell is it in a special moment. You don't want to have Slovenia in this group.
Well, you're talking to the president of Slovenia.
Of course.
I think you are very accurately summarized the position of Slovenia, which is, yes, we are an individual member of the European Union, and we would like to be treated as such. Obviously, there can be ad hoc coalitions on particular issues. I mean, we sometimes agree with one group of countries on something and another group of countries on something else. And this is natural in a pluralistic system such as Europe, such as the European Union. That's fundamental. As far as the European Union as a whole is concerned, we certainly see very valid reasons for Franco-German cooperation, which has always been the engine of the European Union and continues to be the engine of the European Union. For Slovenia, it was a historical, I shouldn't say paradox, but an interesting historical feature that it presides the European Union after Germany and before France, which gives us a wonderful experience of how the dynamics of the European Union works. And I think that that's very good for Slovenia, actually. And we would like to retain our position of a country which has an individual profile. We are a small country, nevertheless we are a country with our own history, with our own political profile, with our own views, and our own capacity to make ad hoc coalitions with other members of the European Union, depending on the issue, and depending on our national interest.
Last question. And you're in a country with your own special problems. I'm referring to your problems with your neighbor, Croatia. The border issues aren't yet solved. Recently, I think it was you that threatened to block Croatia's further integration.
Where did you find it?
I found it in, there was one quote. The president, or was it, I don't know, sometimes they mix the Mr. Janša in the press, I don't know.
Well, I would suggest you to quote your quotes carefully.
But it's definitely that there was a threat towards Zagreb because of this fishing zone before
I
Kiran.
I don't think there was any threat.
But still the border issues aren't solved. Isn't that a contradiction? Because on the one hand you're referring to EU integration, and on the other hand your country hasn't solved so important issues with your neighbor?
Well, it takes two to tango, as you know. I mean, problems of bilateral nature can be solved bilaterally, and we have a process in place which will come to that solution. The two governments have agreed to put these issues before an international arbitration. Now the details are being worked out, and I think they will be worked out. Many countries have various border issues unresolved. I think Germany had an issue unresolved on the border in the Northern Sea, North Sea continental shelf, which was put before the International Court of Justice back in the 1960s. And that was a dispute with the Netherlands and Denmark. So, you know, these things can coexist, can exist at the same time. I don't think that the border issues with Croatia are particularly big.
So that wouldn't be an obstacle for the EU integration of Croatia.
No, Croatia will have to fulfill the criteria of European Union membership. And it will be European Union bodies, in particular the European Commission, who will say what's happening. And that's all.
So Slovenia tries to get this path to the international water system.
Well, look, you are putting an awful lot of different details without a clear framework. That's a separate question altogether and will have to be resolved by an international arbitration. I don't think that this has to do with the Croatia's bid for European Union membership. This is a matter which will be solved bilaterally in accordance with the agreement of the two governments.
So there will be no veto from Slovenia according to that point when there will come the question, is everybody in favor of the membership of Croatia? Slovenia will not play the Cyprus card and say, no, we just have one problem and we have to wait until this point. This, you would say this will not be the case.
I think that, first of all, the criteria for membership have to be fulfilled.
Okay.
We are not yet there. And let's wait.
And this is part of membership? No.
This is
a bilateral.
Well, this is a bilateral issue. Membership criteria are generalized and have to be fulfilled by every member, every candidate country. And that's where the problem lies, really. I think it's very important not to confuse things and not to get into wrong perceptions. The problem of Croatia is not this minor border debate that we have. The problem of Croatia is its fulfillment of criteria for membership. And I think one has to remove that illusionary veil of a problem and look into what is a real obstacle or what is a real problem in Croatia's bid for membership in the European Union. That's what I would advise every observer to do.
Does your government do this? Because sometimes they connect these things, the border issue with the Europe.
I don't remember that. Well, look, I don't remember how that and when that was done. Mm. But you are certainly suggesting that Slovenia is doing something devious. Slovenia is doing nothing devious.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.